Hello, I'm Angela, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 23rd of June 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Heather, Craig, Helen, Ian, Simon, Anna, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the quiz with Mina, news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on Jane Austen's Regency Week, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, information about intelligent shoes and a new series for people with sight loss, a Euro 2020 football song, and rounding all that off, we get to hear Graham Fisher's In My Opinion. But first, we start with some information about Zoom events being run by Beacon to help you get up to speed with technology. For the next 3 weeks, our trainer Kerry will be running sessions online on Tuesdays between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m, which are free to join. Next week, Kerry will be looking at voiceover gestures for Apple tablets and iPhones. Then on the 6th of July, she'll be running a session on cyber scam awareness. And on the 13th of July, she hosts an introduction to the Braille alphabet. If you're interested in joining any of these events, simply email kwilliams@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111. Next we have our guest, the sound quiz. It's as simple as the title suggests. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, without any further ado, here's this week's clip. Have a ponder on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start, as always, with some local news. Brought to us by myself, Rob, Ian, Ed, and first up, it's Angela.
Gavin Williamson has unveiled plans to put dynamic Wolverhampton forward as the UK City of Culture for 2025. The Tory South Staffordshire MP says he has reached out to Labour Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield over launching a bid for the competition, which is run every 4 years by the Department of Digital, Culture, Media and Sport. Mr Williamson, the Education Secretary, said the city would make an ideal candidate due to its rich history and cultural diversity. Mr Williamson said, "Making Wolverhampton the UK's next city of culture would bring well-deserved recognition to the city. This would not just benefit this dynamic and culturally diverse city, but would also bring visibility, benefits and opportunities to the West Midlands, including my own constituency of South Staffordshire." Launching the 2025 competition, Culture Secretary Oliver Dowden said, "UK City of Culture is a fantastic showcase of the huge impact culture has in towns and cities across the country. From Derry, Londonderry, to Hull and Coventry, previous winners have shown how the competition can deliver great cultural participation, drive economic regeneration and boost local pride. I encourage towns and cities across the UK to put forward bids for 2025 and champion their local arts and culture scene. I'm also delighted to confirm the competition will run in future years as a sign of our commitment to levelling up culture across the whole of the UK. A number of cities have already been put forward for the 2025 title, including Bradford, Chelmsford and Southampton. The County of Cornwall has also made a bid, as has Lancashire.
Patients can receive visitors at most hospitals across the Black Country and Staffordshire for the first time since the pandemic struck. Bosses at Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley have allowed the return of visitors from Friday with an online self-booking system. It follows trusts covering Staffordshire, Wolverhampton and Walsall, allowing visitors in previous weeks. Visitor policy at Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust has not changed. And the number of hospital admissions remains low across the region. One visitor per patient per day will be allowed at Russell's Hall Hospital, and they can stay for up to 45 minutes. Chief Nurse Mary Sexton said, "I am really delighted to welcome visitors back to our wards. We know it has been a very difficult time for those unable to see loved ones during their hospital stay. During the last 18 months of the pandemic, we have followed national guidance to keep our patients and staff as safe as possible. However, we have always supported compassionate visits in exceptional circumstances, for example, when a patient is receiving end-of-life care. Visitors will only be able to book the day before or on the day they intend to visit."
There will be no new homes built on Wolverhampton's seven cornfields due to it being excluded from a housing plan, a councillor has claimed. Councillor Paul Birch insists that the Green Belt land, which spans 87.2 acres and is earmarked for a total of 650 homes, has been saved. But other politicians in the region have warned nothing has yet been agreed, with an official decision over the future of the site due to be made in the coming weeks. A draft version of the Black Country Plan, which has included the site, will be published on the 25th of June, ahead of a public consultation. Councillor Birch, who launched the Save the Seven Cornfields campaign, said he believed the land would not be included in the list of allocated sites. He said, "I'm delighted, frankly, for the people of these wards, Blakenhall, Penn and Ettingshaw and Sedgley, that they have won this. They've won and the politicians have stood behind them and listened to them for a change. 8,000 people can't be wrong. I'm a resident here. I don't think about myself as a politician and my family is here. I want the best outcomes for us and it's good news for a change because we lose so many things." However, Dudley North MP Marco Longhi called for caution and urged people to wait until the official announcement of the future of the site is made. He said, "I've been working closely with residents to stop any of the proposed developments on our Green Belt via the Call to Sites initiative. I welcome any news that a proposed development will not be allowed on our Green Belt."
A Labour councillor who defected to the Conservatives a month after being re-elected had been turned down for a cabinet position, it has been claimed. Councillor Gurmukh Maksing, who has represented the Spring Vale ward in Wolverhampton for 5 years, made the announcement last week. He said he joined the Labour Party due to it representing the ordinary person, but those values and beliefs had now faded away from the political party. Now the Wolverhampton Labour Party has slammed Councillor Singh's decision to join the Tories only a few weeks after being refused promotion. A statement posted to Facebook said, "I'm really sorry to announce that you've been let down and Mr. Maksing has emailed me to say he doesn't believe in Labour values and will instead be joining the Tories. He not only deceived you but the Labour group as well. He accepted being a Labour councillor for 5 years and never once said he had issues. Even after his election day victory, he asked if he could be promoted to my new cabinet. And now a few weeks later, after I declined his request, he has shown his contempt to his ex-Labour colleagues and to you by joining the Tories." The statement added the new Labour candidate for Spring Vale would be selected and urged the councillor to use his last ounce of self-respect to resign and put his new values and his party to the test in Spring Vale.
More than 2,500 care home staff across the Black Country in Staffordshire have not yet had a COVID vaccine, as the jabs are to be made compulsory for the workers in England. Staff will be given 16 weeks to get fully vaccinated from the time new legislation is approved by Parliament, Health Secretary Matt Hancock has announced. He said the move, set to take effect from October, was aimed at protecting the most vulnerable from the virus and would cover all workers employed by a care home provider. But concerns have been raised by leaders in the care sector that such an oppressive approach would lead to staff shortages. NHS figures show that across the region, 2,549 out of 18,277 eligible staff, including agency workers, at older adult care homes had not received a first dose by June the 13th, which is 13% of all those eligible for the vaccine. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care at Dudley Council, said, "We've been working with and supporting the care homes in the borough in promoting vaccination uptake and overcoming any concerns of staff. We are pleased with the response of staff and are hoping that all staff are vaccinated in the near future. The council is extremely grateful to all staff working in social care throughout the pandemic and for continued efforts to provide care and support." A spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said the latest figures show that almost 83% of care home staff in Wolverhampton have had their COVID-19 vaccinations so far, and we continue to encourage those that haven't to do so as soon as possible to protect themselves and the people they care for.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen at the Beacon Centre. I'm here with your weekly roundup of everything that's been going on at the charity. First up this week, did you know that it's just been Loneliness Awareness Week? We're so proud of how our telephone befriending scheme helps to tackle loneliness. One of the participants told us, "The befriending scheme has given me something to look forward to each week, a friendly voice to talk to, and someone that listens." We think that the scheme has never been more important than this past year, with lockdown, social distancing and isolation leaving us all feeling lonely at times. Remember, there's no stigma in feeling lonely. And if you think that regular chats with a trained and DBS check volunteer could make a difference for you or even someone you know, then why not get in touch with us? Call 01902 880 111 Mondays to Fridays or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. That's inquiries@beaconvision.org. Did you also know that June is Pride Month? So we'd like to say Happy Pride to everybody celebrating throughout June. We've been highlighting the importance of the month and encouraging people to celebrate who they are with our members. The diversity of the Beacon families, well, it's one of our greatest strengths. In other news, have you entered our summer raffle yet? We've got some fantastic prizes up for grabs, including family passes to some popular West Midlands attractions. All of our raffle prizes have been kindly donated, and we'd like to say a big thank you to all the organisations involved for supporting us. You can get a ticket in one of our shops or online via www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Summer Raffle 2021. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Summer Raffle 2021. We'd also like to say a big thank you to one of our amazing volunteers, Ranjit Bassi, who has conquered all 3,560 feet of Snowdon to raise money for the Beacon Centre and people with sight loss. Ranjit has been supporting us since he was just 15 and has volunteered in our retail team and, more recently, is a telephone befriender, supporting people throughout lockdown. What amazing support. If you've got a fundraising idea to support our work, why not get in touch? You can give us a call on 01902 880 111 or email supporters@beaconvision.org. That's supporters@beaconvision.org. Lastly this week, we want to introduce you to some of the people who help make Beacon what it is. This week, it's the turn of support manager Carson Massoud, who does so much behind the scenes to help our charity run smoothly. She oversees everything from our transport service to systems management, supporting the health and wellbeing teams. And she told us that she loves working for Beacon because she knows that she makes a difference to someone's life. Thanks, Carson. If you'd like to find out more about our transport service, call 01902 880 111 Mondays to Fridays. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to speak to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Helen, for that Beacon update. Now we have some more local news. And starting off this section, we go over to Ian.
New CCTV cameras will be installed at 7 sites across Dudley Borough as part of a £240,000 programme. Key locations were previously identified to be included in the extension of the CCTV network under Phase 3 of the work. The initial £1.7 million project has seen all CCTV cameras replaced and a new control room set up to monitor and respond to incidents. It included town centres and strategic spots for increased monitoring. Phase 2 saw the scheme extended to more sites, and now at least 8 new cameras are being proposed at 7 new sites under the latest phase. They will be Winnell Lane in Cradley, Netherton High Street, Land near Toys Lane in Collygate, the Queensway in Cradley, Wollaston Traffic Island at Meriden Avenue, Kent Street in Upper Gornal, Shell Corner in Halesowen. A report is due to be put before Dudley Council's Cabinet next week outlining the spend. Councillor Laura Taylor, Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said, "The new cameras are already helping people to feel safer in town centres and across the borough, and in the longer term will have a massive effect on the response to issues from our officers as well as police."
There are no plans to charge motorists with high polluting cars in the Black Country, council leaders have said, after a new scheme was launched in Birmingham. A clean air zone has come into operation in the city, which sees certain vehicles charged when they enter the city centre in a bid to reduce emissions and air pollution. Higher polluting cars must pay £8 a day and larger vehicles £50 a day. While the scheme aims to improve the health of residents, it has been met with criticism due to the financial impact on motorists. Birmingham Zone was due to start on June 2nd, but was postponed by 2 weeks after numerous concerns were raised. The leaders of Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton councils confirmed there are no plans to roll out similar schemes. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "Not while I am leader. I think it's an absolute nightmare. I think it will place an unnecessary burden on small and medium-sized businesses. I hope it is for the Black Country's benefit." Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for Environment at Wolverhampton Council, said, "There are currently no plans for a clean air zone in Wolverhampton and the government does not require us to establish one. However, we take the issue very seriously and will continue to monitor air quality in the city."
A Wolverhampton MP has tabled a bill in Parliament which could ban the use of inhumane glue traps as a method of pest control. Jane Stevenson put forward the Glue Traps Offences Bill, which has been backed by government and the RSPCA to tackle the issue. The traps can cause immense suffering to rodents and other animals who can remain alive for at least 24 hours after being captured. Ms Stevenson, who represents Wolverhampton North East, said, "When pest control is needed, we have a responsibility to use the most humane methods in order to prevent unnecessary suffering. A rodent stuck in a glue trap will suffer a slow and painful death, which isn't acceptable when other pest control methods are available. Glue traps don't just capture rodents. Other animals get injured or killed by these traps, including pet cats, birds, owls, bats, fox cubs, and hedgehogs. It is surely time to end the use of these inhumane and indiscriminate traps. I thank Animal Welfare Minister Lord Goldsmith for backing this important piece of legislation, which is part of the government's commitment to improve UK animal welfare standards after Brexit. I look forward to working with colleagues to get this ban on the statute books." Animal Welfare Minister Lord Goldsmith said, "The UK already has some of the highest animal welfare standards in the world, and as an independent nation, we're now able to raise them even further. We're determined to do so, and are currently engaged in the biggest shake-up of animal welfare laws for generations. Part of that involves supporting the banning of these appallingly cruel devices."
An online radio service which seeks to champion local creative arts, culture and music has been launched by Black Country Radio. Black Country Extra will broadcast online throughout the day and on every day of the year. It will feature a range of shows from grassroots sports, music memories for dementia, health-related shows including mental health support, as well as Your Town, featuring news and business information. This will be drawn from towns across Dudley, giving a radio platform to a wealth of local arts and creative organisations from across the Black Country. Radio chiefs have said that this has only been possible due to support from funders and grants during the pandemic, as well as the hard work and commitment of volunteers. Billy Spakeman has been working hard behind the scenes to coordinate with a wide range of groups to get the service up and running. He said this is a fantastic opportunity for local communities, creative arts and cultural and charitable organisations to get involved and gives a valuable platform for the work and creative talent across the Black Country. It broadcasts on 102.5 FM online and is available on DAB Digital Radio.
Action will be taken against taxi drivers congregating near a Black Country park after complaints from neighbours, a council has said. Residents had complained that taxis had been congregating in Avenue Road by Woodside Park in Dudley, causing a nuisance to residents. On at least one occasion, a driver urinated in the park, Dudley Council said. Officers from the authority's waste enforcement team took part in a joint operation with West Midlands Police to target licensed vehicles, both private hire and hackney carriage, using Avenue Road. Three vehicles were spotted and their drivers spoken to during the operation. One was suspended for not displaying the required private hire signage, and another was advised concerning their actions, according to the council. The third vehicle was registered as private hire outside of the borough, but was still spoken to regarding the operation. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "Residents brought this to our attention in April, and we took it very seriously. People should not feel intimidated or unwelcome on their own street or in their local park. This joint operation with our police colleagues shows we can and will take action. We will continue to monitor the results of this intervention and, if necessary, carry out further enforcement activities in the area."
Now it's time for us to head over to Mina, who asks for us, as always, some more tricky questions to ponder.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question one. What age is the world's tallest man? Question two. In what year was sliced bread invented? Question three. What is the title of John Steinbeck's novel? Question four. How deep is the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean? Question 5. Who was the first to bring Christmas trees to Britain in 1700? And question 6. What is a group of porcupines called? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Challenging as always. Now we have some more local news. Brought to us by Angela, myself Rob, Ian and Ed.
People living in Dudley have been encouraged to get more active as part of a council's campaign to promote a healthier lifestyle. Residents are being encouraged to take up regular exercise and activity as part of Dudley Council's Let's Get Moving campaign. It will see free and easy exercise videos shared on the authority's YouTube channel for a year in a bid to encourage the change. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said, "The pandemic has made it tough for many people to find the motivation to get moving, and activities we may have enjoyed before, such as sports or group walking, haven't always been accessible. Now with restrictions easing and with COVID-19 shining a light on the importance of being physically active, there's never been a better time to start moving more, and I hope our residents will take the chance to engage with our campaign. All daily activity makes a difference to our health, such as weeding the garden, cleaning the home and taking a short walk around the block. And no matter what your current level of activity, it's never too late to take the next step. People who don't enjoy sport or the gym have been reassured by chiefs who say that it's not about exercise in the traditional sense, but is more focused on people moving more day to day, such as by hoovering for longer, stretching whilst watching TV, gardening or walking to the shops. Different challenges will be added to the web pages throughout the year, and there is something for everyone no matter their age or fitness level," chiefs added.
A Black Country roundabout is set for a £60,000 makeover after councillors and community groups work together to plan improvements. Work on the roundabout in Shell Corner, located in Long Lane, Halesowen, is expected to start this autumn. It's funded through community infrastructure levy payments, with money coming from developers working in the area. Improvements include replacement of tarmac with more appealing clay brick. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said we are continuing to invest in our local centres and towns, and we are pleased to have secured the fund to make these improvements at Shell Corner later this year. I'd like to pay tribute to the work of everyone involved with Shell Corner Partnership, consisting of the Hales Owen North councillors and key community representatives who have helped develop these plans. I'm sure the works will help to make the roundabout more attractive for those living and working in the area.
An office block will be turned into flats for homeless people in Wolverhampton after councillors approved a £4.5 million project. Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet gave the green light to plans for the single person's accommodation project at a meeting on Wednesday. The scheme will involve the conversion of offices at Bond House in Bond Street into apartments and bedsits, with almost half earmarked for homeless people. Cabinet members heard how officers were aware of four people sleeping rough in the city, with efforts continuing to be made to provide support for them. Councillor Bhupinder Garkal, Cabinet Member for City Assets and Housing, said, "This project is to provide accommodation and support to single vulnerable people, including rough sleepers in Bond House. Bond House will be an office to residential conversion. 32 flats and bedsits, with 15 specifically for people with a history of rough sleeping. The development is scheduled for completion by summer 2022. Council leader Ian Brookfield added, "We're extremely proud of what we're about to do here. This is a real commitment to end the scourge of rough sleeping in our city. We're ahead of the game on this. Other areas will wish they've gone down this road."
A new taxi hailing app has launched in parts of the Black Country and wider West Midlands. Bolt set up shop in Wolverhampton and Birmingham last Wednesday, rivaling Uber, which is already in operation across the region. It allows mobile phone users to hail taxis via the app, seeing the live location of vehicles on a map and guide prices for their journey. The service will also be available in Walsall and Solihull, extending into Dudley and Sandwell in the next few weeks. Bolt first launched in London in 2019. Birmingham and Wolverhampton are the latest pieces of its expansion puzzle across the UK. Bolt taxis will offer a 100% carbon neutral journey, which the firm said complemented the Birmingham City Council's introduction of its Clean Air Zone. Sam Rossitti, UK General Manager at Bolt, said, "Bolt's launch in Birmingham and Wolverhampton complements the Council's commitment to sustainability as a 100% carbon neutral service. The implementation of the Clean Air Zone shouldn't stop Brummies moving around their city freely. Whether it's travelling home from university, a night out in Digbeth, or some retail therapy at the Bullring, Birmingham is a natural home for Bolt's safe, easy and affordable approach to transport."
Solar panels costing about £132,000 are to be installed on the roof of Dudley's new leisure centre in a bid to save taxpayers more than £250,000 in energy costs over the next 25 years. The panels will cost £132,000, with Dudley Council's Cabinet set to approve the plans at a meeting next week. The scheme will be funded by borrowing, but council bosses say it will save the authority £5,000 in the first year on electricity costs and more than £266,000 over a 25-year period. It comes as new photos show the progress made on the new £18 million centre off Flood Street, which is set to open next year. It was announced earlier this year that the centre will be named the Duncan Edwards Leisure Centre. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley said, "As far as I'm concerned, this is a real no-brainer and a move I will be really happy to back and ask my cabinet to follow. It will save the council an enormous amount of money, more than double the initial investment in the first 25 years alone. And of course, it will continue to deliver savings beyond that time. As a council, we are also very conscious of our responsibilities to the environment, and the significant reduction in carbon emissions this will bring is also very much to be welcomed. The work on the new leisure centre is coming along very nicely, and next year, as promised, borough residents will have a state-of-the-art new site to enjoy. Work is also taking place to spruce up Crystal Leisure Centre in Stourbridge and Hales Owen Leisure Centre.
Coming up next, we first hear from Heather, who has for us a piece on intelligent shoes. And following Heather, we have information about a new service for people with sight loss called InfoShare.
Hello, this is Heather with news about intelligent shoes that have been invented for visually impaired people to help you avoid obstacles when you're walking. You might not be rushing out to buy them on a whim, though, because the shoes cost around £2,700 a pair. The shoes are called InnoMake. That's InnoMake. They've been developed by an Austrian company called Tech Innovation, with backing from the Graz University of Technology. So, how do they work? A waterproof ultrasonic sensor is attached to the tip of each shoe, and these sensors vibrate and make noises when they're close to obstacles. The closer you get to an obstacle, the faster the vibration or the noise becomes, rather like a parking sensor on a car. The founder of Tech Innovation is Marcus Raffer, and he has a special interest in these shoes because he's visually impaired himself. Marcus explains that the ultrasonic sensors on the toes of the shoes detect obstacles up to 4 metres away. That's about 13 feet. When you're wearing them, you'll be warned by vibration and/or sound signals that you're getting close to an obstacle. Marcus says he's found the shoes a great help when he's out and about and can't see obstacles in his path. He explains that the sensors detect two pieces of information, the location of an obstacle and its direction. And the direction is particularly important in identifying when the path falls away, for example, when you approach holes or stairs leading down into a subway. The cost of £2,700 includes one device per foot, along with one pair of shoes or installation on an existing pair of shoes that you own, as well as a USB charger. Tech Innovation is already working on the next version of its shoes, aiming to embed a camera that will allow the shoes to detect more about each obstacle in the wearer's path.
InfoShare. InfoShare is a very simple idea. Short audio messages of helpful information about anything to do with living with sight loss that anyone can phone in and record whenever they like, for us to share with vision-impaired listeners across the UK. InfoShare already has many listeners who hear us on a wide variety of listening devices. No one joins or subscribes to InfoShare. It's a free public service that you can listen to whenever you like, or phone whenever it suits you to add what you want to say, which is just like leaving a voicemail or answer machine message. So it's recorded, not live, and we make sure that all messages sound their best before anyone else hears them. And as one listener tells us, joining in is what InfoShare is all about.
InfoShare is a great way to share information, whether that be tips, tricks, life hacks, items of information, equipment to buy, sell, exchange or give away, or just to make your voice heard and share information with other visually impaired people. Everyone phones in their messages in the same way, so it's a completely level playing field.
Charities, organisations and product suppliers that support vision impaired people are also very welcome to contribute a message and share information about what they can offer those who live with sight loss. And our own reporters call in from time to time with items of interest as well. And that's the broad InfoShare mix of informal information that, with your support, we can all freely exchange and share. To find out more, to take a listen or to record a message or learn how easy it is to do that, just call us on 03000 111 555 or visit infoshare.org.uk. That's 03000 111 555 or infoshare.org.uk.
Now we head over to our final block of local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, and starting us off, well, it's me, Rob. An ornamental doily might cover a cake plate, but when it comes to providing a weatherproof covering for a camper at night, it would definitely fail to meet the task. However, when Jagdish Bhutta, aged 53, from Wolverhampton, orders a four-man tent online, he would never have thought that he would receive a lace doily instead. To add insult to injury, when he emailed the company concerned, he received a reply stating the tent was out of stock. The company said that it sent a similar item and have now offered a £4 refund, even though he paid £20 plus £5.99 postage and packaging through PayPal. Father of two, Jagdish, said, I ordered the tent because it was on special offer, and even though I had no holiday planned, thought it would be a good buy. A few weeks later, I received a package in the post, and I realised it was far too small to contain a tent. When I opened it, I realised to my surprise that inside the package was a small lace doily. I thought it must be a mistake, and I know how such things can happen with big companies, and I decided to email them to let them know what had happened. They said that they'd sent me a similar item. I decided to send another email and was offered a £4 refund, even though I paid much more for the tent. As yet, I've heard nothing more about my complaint with the company. Fortunately, I had not booked a holiday, and I just decided to buy the tent because I thought it was a good special offer.
A new group of police dogs have been named after past and present England football players. West Midlands Police were inundated with worthy nominations for both past and present players, but after poring over them, they have revealed the names of Sterling, Jude, Lineker, Rio, Bronze, Keegan and Marcus. The seven-strong squad of Sprockers were only born last week. Chief Instructor Dave Hibbett from the West Midlands Police Dog Unit said, We know how much the nation has been looking forward to the tournament and wanted to be part of the feel-good mood. We had a fantastic social media response after asking people to name this litter in honour of past or present England football players. We could only pick seven from all their nominations in the end, but we feel there is a good mixture. These are figures who have made a difference to lives in some way, be that on the pitch with their talent or off the field with their efforts and achievements. We also want our dogs to make a difference in the future through helping to catch criminals and keeping the public safe. The dogs are named after Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford and Jude Bellingham from the current Euro squad, England's women's footballer Lucy Bronze and former players Rio Ferdinand, Kevin Keegan and Gary Lineker, and they are due to begin their police dog training later this year. It's hoped they will become fully operational and be helping to keep the streets safe within the next 18 months.
A project to introduce a Wolverhampton memorial honouring brave Sikh soldiers who fought an epic last stand has been given a cash boost. Members of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet agreed to provide £35,000 towards the Saragari Monument, which will be erected outside the Guru Nanak Sikh Gurdwara in Wensfield. At the meeting on Wednesday, council bosses said it would be a fitting tribute and the first monument recognising the battle in the UK. Former British Army Reserve and renowned Saragari researcher Jay Singh Sohal welcomed the funding, which will be used on landscaping, with £10,000 being held in reserve if required. Parishioners of the temple, as well as members of the community, raised more than £100,000 for the monument, which is being created by Black Country artist Luke Perry and will be unveiled in September. Authority leader Ian Brookfield said, I am passionate and excited about this proposal. A lot of people, certainly in the Sikh community and those interested in British military history, will know this monument is there to recognise probably the greatest last stand since General Custer, where only a handful of Sikh soldiers held back for as long as they could tens of thousands of the opposition on behest of the British Army. We are one of the first areas in Europe to have this monument. We know there is already worldwide interest in attendance of the official opening ceremony in September. There is huge bonus for the local community of people coming in, visiting and spending on the Wensfield High Street.
A teenage volunteer from the Black Country has shared her story as part of a new campaign from a health and first aid charity. Rebecca Edwards, 17, from Dudley, is featured in the St John's Ambulance Ask Me It campaign, which aims to raise awareness of their work. It has seen more than 2,000 posters and billboards covered in portraits of volunteers to highlight the important role of the charity. Posters, including Rebecca's, each feature a quote encouraging the people to ask them about their real-life experiences. And for the St John's Ambulance cadet, the quote is, Ask me why life means so much more now. She said, I first started volunteering with St John's Ambulance simply as a club to do in my spare time, But once I realised the fantastic opportunities that you can get involved with, from training to helping on duties and events, I couldn't get enough of it and stayed with it. The fact that I am able to save people's lives is just mind-blowing. I can't compute that, but when looking at the other volunteers in the organisation and seeing the amazing work that they do as well, it's just crazy. Members of the public can find out more about St John's Ambulance and how to get involved at sja.org.uk.
More than a dozen performers will take to the stage for a music festival held for the first time in almost a year. Bash Chamberlain is organising the event, which will take place at Techno Cricket Club on Sunday, June 27th from 12 noon to 6 p.m. There will be music, street food and craft stalls, and everyone is welcome, with tickets at £5 each. Bash said, "We've run events there before. We're good friends with them. Obviously, we haven't done anything this year. We had planned to do a few more last summer and this summer, but we couldn't. So lots of bands are eager to perform. We've got a band called Bruiser and an acoustic duo called Jane and JP and about 13 other performers in total. We've run a lot of open mics on a regular basis, so this is like showcasing a lot of the acts that come through our open mics. My job has been non-existent for a year, so it's a nice opportunity to get people together. It's a community event. The idea is just open it up for families and musicians so we can all feel good for the day on what's been a difficult time for everybody. Hopefully we can all go back to running events and being musicians now after finding new jobs." Tickets are available from the Cricket Club or online at Skiddle Events. Any are left, they will be available on the door on the day. It's time once again to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hi everybody. What a gorgeous few days of weather we've been enjoying, or not, dependent on your opinion of the temperature. Whatever it is, I hope it ain't sapped your mental strength and that you're ready to receive the latest round of stuff for your entertainment. So off we go. And did you know that? The tallest man ever recorded was an American, and he was a giant, Robert Wadlow, and he lived from 1918 to 1940. He stood 8 feet 11 inches. And the tallest living man is 37-year-old Sultan Kozan from Turkey, who is 8 feet, 2.8 inches. He set the world record in 2009. Both men's extraordinary growth is due to a pituitary issue. And Lord Montague, the Earl of Sandwich, who lived in the 1700s, reportedly invented the sandwich so he wouldn't have to leave his gambling table to eat. And did you know that sliced bread was first manufactured by machine and sold in the 1920s by Chillicote Baking Company in Missouri? You could say that it was the greatest thing since, well, sliced bread. And we've all heard the excuses, if not used it, for handing in homework. But John Steinbeck, the author of Mice of Men, actually had his homework eaten by his dog. The author's pup chewed up an early version of Mice and Men. He said, "I was pretty mad at the time, but perhaps the poor fellow may have been acting critically." Mount Everest, at over 29,000 feet tall, is the highest point on Earth, but it doesn't compare to the deepest point on Earth, which is the Mariana Trench, which is over 36,000 feet deep, nearly 7 miles, and that's in the Pacific Ocean. While Everest is being mentioned, lots of people have sadly died climbing the famous mountain. In fact, there are the remains of over 200 dead climbers on Mount Everest because it's so difficult to bring them down. And here's a bit of a myth about Christmas trees. Because Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, wasn't the first to introduce Christmas trees to Britain from his native Germany. Queen Charlotte did that in the late 1700s. But Victoria and Albert are credited with popularising the custom in the mid-1800s. And did you know that a group of porcupines is called a prickle? A group of apes is a shrewdness, and it's a business of ferrets, a murder of crows, an obstinacy of buffalo, and a convocation of eagles. There are loads more unexpected ones too, but I think my favourite one is the collective noun for a group of clergymen, though I suspect that a vanload of vicars is a jokey one. However, a mass of priests is true, as is, and wait for it, a lie of politicians. But of course I couldn't possibly comment. And you rode up me lovers, as Dolly Allen would say. That's your lot for this week. So, providing that I'm not censored over the last item, I'll be back next week to astound you even more. If they do come for me, though, I'll plead insanity. That should work. So for now, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Thank you very much for those, Roger. Fascinating as always. Now we head over to Mina for this week's weather.
The weather for this week starts off wet but looks to be mostly settled, cloudy and dry. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering around 23 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:48 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:35 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 25th of June, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. Moving on to Saturday 26th and Sunday 27th of June, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. And on Monday 28th of June, all the way through to Thursday 1st of July, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 23 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that weather update, Mina. Sounds like I'm going to be busy with my watering can this week. Now we have Sounds of Nature, which this week is brought to us by Ed.
The windchat is a summer visitor to UK heathlands, moorlands and open meadows. A little smaller than a robin, the windchat has quite a big head and short tail. It can frequently be seen sitting on fence posts or small bushes, making a soft clicking call. Windchats inhabit open meadows and wastelands, wet habitats and dry heath. They are summer and passage migrants, wintering in Africa.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we get the latest football news, brought to us by Ian.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Albion have opened talks with Barnsley about appointing Valerian Ismail as their new manager. The France-born 45-year-old, who has German citizenship, is now the leading contender for the role, having been identified by chief executive Xu Kei as the man to take the club forward. Xu Kei, who is known as Ken, took charge of the manager hunt earlier this week after sporting and technical director Luke Dowling left the club by mutual consent. And he has identified Ismail as his number one choice to succeed Sam Allardyce. Albion, though, still need to agree compensation with Barnsley to appoint the former Crystal Palace defender. According to reports, Ismail has a £2 million release clause in his contract. The former Wolfsburg boss led Barnsley to the Championship playoffs last season, where they lost to Swansea. But that achievement put him on the radar of a host of clubs, with Ismail having also been considered for the vacancies at Sheffield United and Crystal Palace this summer. Ismail made 13 appearances for Palace in 1998 during his playing career and has previously been head coach of Greek outfit Apollon Smyrnis and Austrian side LASK. Wolves have confirmed the signing of Colombian defender Yerson Mosquera on a 5-year deal. 20-year-old centre-half joins from Atletico Nacional in his homeland for a fee of around £4.5 million. He comes in as the first buy of the Bruno Lage era and will join up with the first team squad for the start of pre-season on July the 5th. Wolves technical director Scott Sellers said, "We've been monitoring Yersin for quite a while, and there has been a lot of interest from clubs across Europe, including some of the biggest names in the Premier League. They all see his potential and quality, as do we. But we spoke to him about the pathway we have at the club, and he believes Wolves is the best fit for him. He's a centre-back who is very athletic, very aggressive, very competitive, and has a great attitude to defending. He wants to defend, he wants to make tackles and headers, and has great presence in both boxes. But he's also very good technically, and very composed on the ball. He's certainly a player with a high ceiling. Someone who is highly regarded in Colombia, and we believe the attributes he has will fit very well into the Premier League and into our squad. Our new head coach Bruno has been involved in the process, has looked at the player, and together we feel Yerson has the perfect profile to come in and improve the depth of the squad."
Thanks for that sports update, Ian. Now, as well as helping on the Talking News, Ian is also in his spare time a musician, and he has recently composed a song for the current Euro 2020 competition, which has found itself featured on BBC 5 Live and BBC WM. Up next is a clip of Ian's recent appearance on BBC WM, followed by his song in full.
"Now, bringing back the buzz of an international tournament so important to so many people after the last 18 months, and this man is really buzzing.
We're more sick of lockdown, we can't take any more. Stuck inside for ages, we ain't been at the doer. We can't wait for kickoff, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word."
So this comes from songwriter Ian Rouse, who joins me now from Sedgley. Ian, how are you, my man?
Hello, good evening, how are you?
I'm very good, I love it. It's put a smile on my face, Ian. How did you come up with the lyrics, mate?
Well, I wrote the song a couple of years ago originally. I don't know whether you remember it, but it was about Wolves getting to the FA Cup semi-final. And it was just about the excitement that everybody had at the time. And everybody was thrilled about it. And this phrase was doing the rounds at the time. But I noticed people putting on Facebook and things like that that buzzing A, the word, was the phrase that they used. So that was my inspiration for it. In the first instance, when it was about the Wolves, and with the football tournament now, the Euros starting, I was contacted actually by Sean Farrington from Radio 5 Live,
yeah,
and asked whether I might like to do a Euros version of it, because he's a Wolves fan as well. He has a season ticket at Wolves, and he asked whether I might like to do a Euros version of the song. So I sat down on Friday last week and I wrote some verses for the Euros. That was it, really.
"We more sick of lockdown, we can't take any more. Stuck inside for ages, we ain't been at the door. We can't wait for kickoff, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word. Buzzing down the market, buzzing up the town. That's what the folks I'm saying, the winner's got around. Buzzing down the chip shop, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing either word. England fans are hoping they'll get it right this year. If they in the final, everyone will cheer. In 96 they should have won, but only finished third. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word. Buzzing down the market, buzzing up the town. That's what the folks I'm saying, the winner's got around. Buzzing down the chip shop, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word. The Welsh are always singing hymns and arias all day. Dreams of nicks and dragons come out again the Wembley way. From Pontypool to Abersoch they march on undeterred. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word. Buzzing down the market, buzzing down the market.
dancing up the town. That's what the folks are saying, the weather's got around. Buzzing down the chip shop, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing either word. Scotland fans, they all believe success is overdue. It's time the tartan army showed what they can do. One too many whiskies, speech slightly slurred. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing either word. Buzzing down the market, buzzing up the town. That's what the folks I'm saying, the waiter's got around. Buzzing down the chip shop, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing either way. British fans united, it's so good football's back. Let's get behind our British teams, let's cheer when they attack. It will be so exciting, emotions will be stirred. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing ain't the word. Buzzing down the market, buzzing up the town. That's what the folks are saying, the weather's got around. Buzzing down the chip shop, by now you must have heard. All roads lead to Wembley, buzzing either way.
Thanks for that football-themed music, Ian. Good stuff. Now we move over to Anna, who asked for us a piece on Jane Austen and Regency Week.
Hello, this is Anna with an article about an annual celebration of the popular novelist Jane Austen. Jane Austen's Regency Week has been organised in June each year since 2005, until COVID-19 interrupted proceedings. The event has grown to become a 9-day celebration of Jane's life and work, held in the pretty Hampshire villages of Alton and Chawton, where Jane spent most of her life. Jane Austen was born on the 16th of December 1775 in nearby Steventon, where her father was rector of the church. After some years in Bath, she later returned to this area of Hampshire. Regency Week celebrations began in 2005, sponsored in her memory by her fifth niece, Caroline Knight. The only event in 2005 was a theatrical performance. Then in 2006 and 2007, the event increased to include a Regency supper and a craft fair, which was open for 9 days. Events have grown in number ever since and are very popular with all who enjoy Jane Austen's work. Alton holds a Regency ball, with all participants wearing Regency dress and dancing to the music of the time. Walking tours also take place in the areas in which Jane spent her childhood. In Chawton, celebrations are mostly held in Chawton Manor House and gardens, owned by Jane's family. As well as cream teas and garden tours, Caroline Knight gives talks about day-to-day life in a crumbling 16th century house, seeped in 4 centuries of continuous family ownership. In the grounds stands Chawton Cottage, where Jane lived for the last 8 years of her life. You can visit the cottage, which is now Jane Austen's house museum. Here, Jane wrote and completed 6 of her 8 novels. Sense and Sensibility was published in 1811, followed by Pride and Prejudice in 1813, Mansfield Park in 1814, and Emma in 1815. Persuasion and Northanger Abbey were published posthumously in 1817, after her death on the 18th of July, 1817. Jane Austen remains very popular to this day, and when reading these pieces of literature, the reader gains a truly realistic picture of English middle-class life in the Regency era. Unfortunately, plans for this year's Jane Austen's Regency Week, due to start on the 19th of June 2021, have been cancelled due to COVID-19. But let's hope the event can be enjoyed in 2022.
Thank you for that piece, Anna. Very interesting. Now we move over to Craig, who asked for us his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig, and I'm going to tell you some jokes from your Black Country joke book. I got a birthday card and I opened it and a Yorkshire pudding fell out. It was from Aunt Bessie. Here's another one for you. I saw a lad from Lower Gornal talking into an envelope. I said to him, why are you talking into that envelope? He said to me, I'm trying to send a voicemail. And finally, I said to my doctor, I can't keep my hands from shaking. He said to me, well, do you drink a lot? I replied, well, not really, doctor. I spill most of it. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thanks for those rib ticklers, Craig. Now we head over to Mina, who has for us the answers to this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What age is the world's tallest man? The answer is 37. Question 2. In what year was sliced bread invented? And the answer here is 1920. Question 3. What is the title of John Steinbeck's novel? And of course, the answer is Of Mice and Men. Question 4. How deep is the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean? And the answer here is 36,000 feet. Question 5. Who was the first to bring Christmas trees to Britain in 1700? And the answer here is Queen Charlotte. And finally, question 6. What is a group of porcupines called? And the answer, a prickle. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a 10-pin bowling ball hitting the pins. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Right from the opening paragraphs of his glorious little tome, Great Eccentrics, first published in 1984, author Peter Bushell escorts us, so we are informed, on a grand tour of the bizarre technical world of the eccentric, and mourns a world of increasing conformity in which individuality is being corroded almost daily, before celebrating the lives of such oddball luminaries as Squire Osbaldistone, who defeated the French tennis champion using just his hand as a racket, Jonas Hanway, who was convinced that tea drinking was the root of all social evil leading to divorce and suicide, and Lieutenant Colonel Alfred Daniel Wintle, MC, described in his Daily Express obituary as a real corpse reviver who took more boredom out of life in the 1950s and 60s than any other man in Britain. The unflattering but accurate sobriquet of Mad Jack Wintle, or Colonel Bogey, as he was known in the popular press, probably explains it all. He despised bureaucracy, and his skirmishes with bloated authority became legendary. In 1966, as he predicted he would, he died of a clot. Splendid stuff. Indeed, as I compose this right now, I notice a similarly themed book, Eccentric Lives and Peculiar Notions, also first published in the same year as Bushell's and written by author and esotericist John Michel, in which he celebrates the extraordinary lives of, amongst others, Lady Blount and her efforts on the waters of the Old Bedford Level to prove the earth was flat, and Colonel Charles de Leyte Waldo Sibthorpe MP,
the most conservative member of Parliament in history, who opposed even the mildest amendment on any aspect of the historic English constitution. The gloriously bonkers Sibthorpe denounced the Great Exhibition of 1851 as an alien plot and called upon God to smite the Crystal Palace with hailstones and lightning. It may not be too hard to deduce from these representative residents of my bulging bookshelves, for which by dint of sheer space each candidate must fully justify its inclusion, that I have a sympathy, and since I'm told, though I would vehemently disagree, that my own life is oft conducted within a parallel universe, a certain empathy with those to whom, as Bushell suggests, display their differences in their crotchets by marching to the beat of a different drum. And after being fascinated by such characters as Lord Monboddo, who was convinced that all babies were born with tails, and the scientist-philosopher J.B.S. Haldane, described by Nobel laureate Sir Peter Medawar as the cleverest man I ever knew, whose bleak but highly irreverent poem published in 1964 about his own terminal carcinoma has attained the status of minor masterpiece, I have concluded that whilst we may have issues in managing our great institutions such as the NHS, be floundering in the mire of our relations with our European neighbours, or riven with social divisions seemingly unsolvable by our politicians, the one field in which we consistently float like cream to the top is in our unrelenting procreation of the great British nutcase. And long may continue, for in the depths of adversity, sadness or strife, are they not a source of comfort, perhaps inspiration, for those of us trailing in their wake of weirdness, who would at heart simply love to have the personal courage, inner conviction, or sheer finger-waving defiance to also march to that different drumbeat, to do it, a la Sinatra, their way. Other countries sustain their fair share of oddballs, of course, but here in good old Blighty we can enjoy a particularly bounteous crop that punches well above its weight. They may not be eccentric all of the time or in all of their views. The distinguished Victorian scientist Francis Galton otherwise blotted his copybook with his proposal that only the upper classes should be allowed to breed. Conversely, Dr. William Price was a revolutionary Welsh druid who geared his life according to his beliefs and routinely performed ceremonies at the Serpent Temple in Wales erected by druid revivalists. Then again, is Dr. Price brought under the umbrella of eccentric simply by manifestation of his lifestyle and beliefs? Many modern-day followers of Druidism would doubtless dispute the suggestion. Yes, it's a tricky one to nail down, but etymology is always a helpful starting point, so let's head there. Eccentricity is defined by the Oxford English Dictionary as the quality or habit of deviating from what is customary. And in engineering terms, it also describes something that is off-centre. But this bland definition of the condition goes little way to defining what makes an eccentric, which takes us deep into the realms of psychology, the working of the brain, even the irreconcilable nature-nurture argument. And forgive me for not going there, for I am but a humble scribe. Yet, one aspect of which I am sure is that it is unnoticed by the sufferer, to wit, I am suggesting that it is a self-effacing prophecy, and that anyone who believes or states themselves to be eccentric is emphatically not. Therein lies the leap from overt ostentation, gregariousness, extroversion, or similar self-conscious characteristics that fall more accurately within the oeuvre of showmanship. The true eccentric, however bizarre the condition may manifest itself, would look agog upon anyone suggesting such a thing. The true eccentric believes their own views to be entirely mainstream, rational, and normal. To suggest otherwise would rail the defence of the proud mom at her son's army pass-out parade, who declares proudly, "Ooh, look, Johnny is the only one in step." All simple enough in our not-too-academically rigorous examination of the term in this context, but probe much further and distinctions become decidedly blurred. And lest the examples already given here may create the impression that eccentrics are universally benign souls, a source of amusement and wonderment by their antics, but hardly likely to ultimately threaten the fabric of society, we must clarify that this is not so. eccentricity, or, harking back to the Oxford English Dictionary definition, the quality or habit of deviating from what is customary, can equally be a force for malevolence. Stand and be counted those to whom I routinely allude as representative of type, simply because such is their unique behaviour that I need not detain you with an explanation of their vile accomplishments. The name alone is sufficient. Idi Amin, Robert Mugabe, and the daddy of them all, A. Hitler Esquire. Genocidal maniacs? Not a word of it in their eyes. And if it were possible to interview these and their colleagues in the Hall of Infamy, and not forgetting some females as well, there are those who would now include Freedom Doyen Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been deposed from her lofty perch following the alleged genocide of Rohingya Muslims, I fair guarantee they would all consider themselves entirely justified in their rationale, despite being the only one in step. Which brings us to more pragmatic considerations of eccentric behaviour, especially when those eccentrics, who wouldn't ever describe themselves as such and would continue to entertain the clear misapprehension as to their own exemplary logic, may have ultimate control over the lives of thousands or even millions of people. The spectacular catalogue of verifiably nonconformist decisions of President Donald Trump, I make no political comment on whether they're right or wrong, but they are decidedly off the wall. But he, and millions of his followers, consider him entirely reasonable. Close at home, we have the farrago, for that is what it is, the jumbled mess of Brexit, largely compounded by those of wildly disparate views, some of which by any pan-acceptable yardstick are nudging dangerously into the zones of extremity, and all by people who would argue to the end that they are entirely reasonable and further claiming to act on behalf of their followers who think likewise. I must question if there's been an explosion in the number of eccentrics that fall within our definition, or whether I have stretched that definition beyond its bubble of self-containment. It's certainly a far cry from our traditional acceptance of eccentricity as expounded by Nestor Webster, who throughout Britain in the 1920s promulgated the idea that civilization was threatened by an unholy combination of occultists and Freemasons. She was, in the classical sense, crackers, but ultimately innocuous. Not quite so our contemporary entourage, it seems. And there's the cause for unease. Historical events may not repeat themselves, but they do sometimes rhyme. The Shavian alphabet, also known as the Shaw alphabet, was posthumously funded by and named after Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw. It was conceived as a way to provide simple phonetic orthography to replace difficulties of conventional spelling. One Shavian maxim that has passed into widespread usage states, "The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man." Reputedly one of the world's top leadership experts, whose guidance is sought by the likes of rock stars, royalty, politicians and business executives, Robin Sharma says, "This is one of my favourite quotes from George Bernard Shaw. Sure, be practical. I agree it's important to use common sense. True, foolish risks can lead to difficult consequences. But having said that, don't be so scared of failure and disappointment that you fail to dream. Don't always be so reasonable and practical and sensible that you refuse to seize glorious opportunities when they show up and push the envelope as to what's possible for you. The world needs many more dreamers, unreasonable souls who fight the urge to be ordinary. You can be one of them. Beginning today." In the blink of an eye, or within one paragraph at least, Mr. Sharma seamlessly transgresses the line from erudite observation to not too subtle sales pitch. And I understand the urban slang response to his closing entreaty runs along the lines of, "Yeah, right, whatever." Nevertheless, it would be enlightening to ascertain if many of our current movers and shakers have been influenced by Mr. Sharma's work. Frankly implausible, or perhaps more likely by the entirely random nature of their chromosomes, are predisposed to move in that direction. Answers on a postcard, please. Me? I'll just continue to listen to my heart while others discuss their soul. but I will conclude with a provocative bon mot on eccentricity that is equally germane to our nonconformists as it is to engineering, yet which has entirely distinct ramifications. It only takes one crank to start a revolution.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!